Good evening and Chodesh Tov. Good month to everyone. We're doing Binyan HaBayit. This is our fourth or fifth class. And we're in the middle of the chapter that discusses Lo Tov Hiyot Adam Levado. As usual, we're going to begin with reading from Rav Eliyahu Titov, from the Sefer Ishu Beito, The Jew in His Home. And then the second half of the class, we'll discuss orally different concepts. So now we're working from the text, and we left off with a quote, the Gemara that Rav Kitov quoted, Kol mi she'en lo isha, whoever doesn't have a wife, sharui belo simcha, he is without happiness, belo bracha, without blessing, belo tova, without good, belo Torah, without Torah, Belo choma, without fortification, without a wall. Belo shalom, without peace. And then Rav Kitov expands on each one of these. But I sense that people were getting depressed by this discussion. So we're going to skip over it. And you could all look it up. He expands on why each of these. Why is it that the home is the one that gives a person a sense of bracha, that's the source of a person's simcha, tova. That's the source of one's happiness, blessing, all the good, the Torah, one's peace. And you could all look it up. I'm going to skip a little bit and then come back. Rav Kitov mentions, says, "Why?" You'll ask yourselves, why did the Torah command us to get married? And why have we expounded so much upon the benefits and the blessings that are supposed to emanate from a marriage? If we wouldn't have all this, we know we would still get married. The world all around us gets married, even though they don't have a commandment from the Torah to get married. So he explains that the Rambam says that before the Torah was given, people were getting married. So you could say that stems from the initial commandment when Adam was created, v'davak b'ishto, one should be glued to his wife, so to speak. But he explains, why do we need this commandment? Why does the Torah have to command us to get married? And our sages expound so much on this mitzvah, so that when a person enters the chuppah, when a person enters marriage, he'll recognize that he's entering a new world. It's not just he's taking on a partner. Or like some people, they live together, unfortunately, today. You have people who are living together, and then 2 years later, they decide to get married. We're not discussing how forbidden that is, how many prohibitions one is over by doing that, but the concept of marriage is a new world. Now we're talking about the ideas behind it, not the halacha. Obviously, one who does that is being over on many halachos. He's transgressing. But also from the ideals that the Torah set for us, a person is supposed to recognize that when he's getting married, he's entering a new world. He's entering a world of mitzvos. He's entering a world of purity. He's entering a world of glory, of blessing, of peace. A world where the person is going to be more corrected and more complete. And a world where he can reach his potential. A person shouldn't think that he enters marriage, he's doing a regular function, just like he's getting a job. Everyone gets a job, so everyone gets married. No, there's something much deeper in the concept of marriage. And you can't compare a person who does a great action and has no clue that he's doing it to someone who understands the depth and the value of the actions that he's doing. And that's why our sages expounded on it, so that we would understand what is marriage. And marriage is a lot more than just the agreement between two that they're going to be faithful to one another. And that's why it's important to study beforehand, and that's why we did begin expounding on what a person is lacking when he's not married, what he's going to get when he is married. The marriage is something that uplifts a person. Even the word nisu, Lenasot means to lift. Sa means lift. And nisuin is the uplifting of one, of two, of the couple. And we also know that our sages taught us a rule, gadol ha-mtzuveh ve'oseh mimi she'eino mtzuveh ve'oseh. We value a person who does something after he was ordered to do it more than someone who volunteers to do it. You might think, well, one who volunteers is doing more. But think of how many times your parents asked you to take out the garbage. The initial inclination is not now. When someone wants you to do something, so you feel like you're losing control. And one of the things that every person wants in this world is to feel in control. So when one is commanded by God to do something, then he's going to have a greater yetzer hara not to do it, because he's no longer in control. God told me to get married. Look at any teenager. That's an extreme example. Parent says, put on your shoes. No, I'm going barefoot to school. What do you mean you're going barefoot to school? You don't want to go barefoot to school. Yeah, but I don't want to listen to you either. So as much as we outgrow the teenage years, we all still have that inclination that we want to feel like we're doing what we want. And when we have a commandment, so we have greater reward for it. The Torah recognizes that it's going to be more difficult for a person to do something after God has told him to do it. And that's why we have this concept that gadol ha-mtzuveh ve'oseh, one who's commanded and performs the action, is greater than one who is not commanded, because it's harder for him to do it. And that's another reason why we study the commandments and the words of the Torah that tell us about the importance of marriage. Even though everyone, God willing, is going to get married even without these studies. We said one gain is that we'll understand what we're entering. And the other thing we just mentioned is that it's greater if one understands the commandment. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Kol Adam She'en Lo Isha, Rabbi Elazar said, every man that does not have a wife, Eino Adam. He doesn't enter the status that we call Adam. And we mentioned in previous classes that the term Adam is not man. The term Adam is a high level of man. Man who has certain high spiritual potentials. Shenemar, as the verse states, Zachar unkeva bera'am, God created them male and female, Vayikra et shemam Adam, and he gave their name. This male and female together have the name Adam. A man who is married, a man who is together with his wife, he can have the term Adam.
They
have the term Adam. Correct. The pasuk says, Vayikra et shemam. God called their names, that's plural, Adam,
so
singular.
The commandment brought to the woman and to the man equally.
We don't have a commandment. We have a term. The term Adam, the pasuk says, God gave them, male and female, the term singular Adam. So how does that work? Two people have one term of Adam. So the pasuk is coming to teach us that a person only gets the status of Adam after he gets married. Adam, Adam, was created whole. What?
But you can understand that to be also for a woman.
Okay. Adam was created whole. After he was created, so God took one of his ribs and he made him lacking. Now Adam is missing a rib. God took that rib and built it into a woman.
A bunch of ribs.
Huh? And then God commanded man and woman, he commanded them, you two should form one being, one flesh. When they find one another and they reunite, again they are called Adam, the whole man. Now our sages discuss this. What does it mean that they were created male and female? So one opinion says, like we just said, that Adam was created, then his rib was taken out, he was lacking, that rib was made into the woman, and when he unites with his wife, he is again whole. And that's what the pasuk means. In general, this whole creation process, they were created male and female. But there's another opinion among our sages that says that the first man was created, one face on this side, and on the back, there was another face. One side was male, one side was female. And when it says that God took the tzela, tzela could mean a rib, tzela could also mean a side. God took one side off of man and created that into the woman. Why did God create the woman from one of man's ribs? Why didn't God create a woman and create a man? Every other animal was created male and female. God created male dogs and female dogs, male cats and female cats. When it came to creation of man, God creates male, then takes out a rib and creates the female. Why? The reason is so that there'll be good adhesion between them. True cohesion between them. They'll cling together naturally. And when you have two plants that have the same root, then they grow together.
Why not the animal?
Maybe for the animal it's not so important.
But the animal is
I'm not sure you're right. One male goes with many, many females, and I don't think the females are...
humans? Excuse me. Our religious...
Okay, but the Torah wanted us. The Torah wanted us. So you're asking about the concept of many wives. That's something we have to discuss. It's a good question.
I'm saying it's the same thing for animals. Where animals were created individually, but yet they inherit each other. They cling to each other, just like man does with a woman.
Okay, so we have to expand a little bit. When we say a man and a woman... What? Your question is valid. Okay. You're saying, what's the difference between man's clinging to his wife and the animal's clinging to its mate?
Right.
So, the Netziv expands on the concept that Rav Kitov presents here. He says that when the Torah says that the woman was created ezer kenegdo, so when God created the woman, God created her in a fashion that she'll be matching to her husband in her intellect, in her natural tendencies, her traits. The mating between a male and a female human is not supposed to be only a physical thing. They're supposed to unite on idealistic and spiritual and levels that go far beyond the physical. We're going to discuss that the physical ideally is supposed to represent something that's happening in their spiritual. It's supposed to represent the connection that's between them.
It's more of a soulmate than a...
You could call it a soulmate, however you want to term it. So that's the idea, right? That's the idea that he's developing here. He doesn't spell it out as much. The Netziv discusses this on that pasuk of Ezer Kenegdo. He raises the same question. He says, why was man created male and only then the female created, whereas all the other animals were created male and female? God wanted us to have generations of human. God wanted man to procreate, so why didn't God create woman in the first place? So he says that was the idea, that she should come from one of his ribs and she should have more of the tendencies that will match his tendencies, and that way they're going to build a home together. There's a beautiful Dvar Torah that Rav Reuven Feinstein said. I think we mentioned here. What was Adam saying when God came to him? Didn't we mention a few classes ago? Eve eats from the fruit that she's forbidden to eat from, right? Chava takes from the fruit. And then she gives Adam. She comes and she speaks to Adam and somehow she convinces him to eat from it. Some Midrashim say he didn't know what he was doing. Others seem to say he did. However she did it, she got him to eat from the fruit. And then God comes and says to Adam, what'd you do? And Adam says, Ha'isha asher natata li, the woman that you gave me, he natna li min ha'etz va'ochel, she gave me from the fruit and I ate.
Right.
It's all her fault. And we say that Adam was kafui tova. He didn't recognize the good that God gave him in turning and saying, she did it. What was Adam saying? So Rav Reuven Feinstein said that he was saying, God, you didn't give me a wife like every other animal. If you meant for me to be with her like an animal mates with its spouse, then we'd have nothing to do with one another afterwards, right? We'd be together at night, and the rest of the day we'd each live our separate lives. Animals don't go conversing. You don't see couples walking around, taking walks together, discussing things. That's not what you had in mind. You created for me a woman so that I'd have a smart partner, and I'd take counsel with her, and we'd think things through together. Well, that's what I did. She came to me and she advised me and she said, here, have a bite. This is good. This is a good thing for you. So I listened to her. This is what you wanted me to do, God. Ha'isha shanatata imadi, the woman that you gave with me, that you gave to be my soulmate, my partner. So I tried to live up to what you gave me. And look, this is what it got me. So that's where Adam was kafui tova. That's where Adam was not recognizing the good that God gave him. God gives him a soulmate and he says, well, she gave me bad advice, God, you see? What do you mean? The best thing in the world is for you to have this partner to think things through with. And by the way, this is something that we find throughout Chazal, that they did take counsel with their wives. We're accustomed to thinking that in Chazal's time, the man ran the house. Walk into the house and say, this is what goes, and that's what went. And we see again and again that life was not that way. Not in the time of the Gemara, not in the time of the Shulchan Aruch. We had a whole class on this a few months ago.
Sure. I think civilization only started recognizing women's rights not a month ago.
But in Judaism it wasn't that way. We discussed how Yalta was upset at her husband. The Gemara records one of the Amoraim's wives, a guest came and he didn't send her from the glass of wine after benching, and that glass of wine is supposed to bless her offsprings. So she got upset and she went up to the attic and she bashed I don't know how many barrels of wine. If in those days what the husband said went, so she wouldn't dare do such a thing. Rav Elazar ben Azariah was told to go and be Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, he was told to be the Nasi. And he said, wait, I gotta ask my wife. What's he asking her for? Well, they took counsel with their wives. We see it time and again. So, back to Rav Eliyahu Kitov. Rav Kitov is saying God created the woman from one of his ribs and not a separate creation. She had to come from man so that the adhesion between them would be good, it would be true cohesion, and it would be a natural cohesion. They'd cling together naturally. And they'd be like two branches that come from the same root, and you can't separate between them and try to plant one without the other. The natural thing for a man and a woman is supposed to be together. And that's, just, by the way, one of the things when guys ask me, how do I know she's the right one? So there are a few criteria, but one of the criteria usually is that you're dating her and you suddenly feel like, I don't want to stop. It's not that I want this date to go on. Maybe I got to go do something and maybe I want to go back to learning or go ride my motorcycle or who knows what. But in general, I don't want to think of a day where we won't be dating. The idea that I enjoy being with this person. I want to be with her tomorrow too and the next day. And that's one of the signs that we might be matching to get married. And that's part of this concept, that it becomes natural for a person to be with the other person. This is part of how he identifies himself. Now, I just want to remind you guys, we mentioned this in the past, I'm saying it again. Everything we're discussing here is after marriage. This isn't something you're supposed to expect during the dating process. This was one exception. This feeling that you feel like you want to be with the person is one of the feelings a person might sense while he's dating. Everything else that we've discussed is about how a person's going to build his home and the relationship he's supposed to develop in the home. It's not that this is what it's going to be when you're dating or when you're ready to marry the girl. The relationship really begins the day after the marriage, not the day before. So what to expect during the dating? So go see our dating classes. We have 6 or 7 on the web. So we did that already. Just not to confuse the issues. Therefore, the Torah commanded us to be married, and the Torah tells us how God created man and put it in his nature to be with a woman, and the man and a woman together, that's the concept of Adam. Now let's go over to a few topics Some are related to what we discussed and some not directly. We're discussing the foundations of the home. We're discussing the importance of love and expressing love and showing affection. And last week we started discussing the concept of honoring one another. We mentioned that our sages say, "Mechabda yoter migufo," that a person is supposed to honor his wife more than himself. And we mentioned the importance of buying her nice clothing, the importance of buying nice clothing before Yom Tov, and in general, taking care that she be dressed the way she feels comfortable, she be dressed well. And we mentioned not saying jokes at her expense, something that unfortunately today is very, very common. And we discussed the in-laws, dealing with the in-laws and the concept of having a unified front that the couple discusses between themselves, and afterwards they speak to the parents. And we discussed last week the concept of not siding with one parent, but rather the couples deciding things together, and whatever they decide, they're unified on. And we discussed the tips of how to deal with in-laws, what yes to say, what not to say, what to quote to the wife, what to quote to the parents, and that each one should try and deal with their own parents. And that's about where we left off, I think. So I can't stress enough not to make jokes at your wife's expense. Even if she smiles and even if she laughs, it's not right. And very often, fights and insults and misunderstandings and hurting one another's feelings, it begins with jokes. Very, very, very often. And it's very hard to know where the fine line is. You could be married 20 years. It has nothing to do with the experience or how well you know the other person. You can never know what mood they're in or how they're going to take what you say. There's no reason to do it. Why play with someone's feelings? There are 100 other things to joke about. And a person should not joke at his wife's expense. And if he does, then he should apologize. It's important to praise one's spouse. And here we'll throw in a tip. After you get married, your wives are going to start wearing head coverings. And the first thing that they're going to wonder is, how does it look? So be prepared after the wedding to tell her how wonderful she looks in a head covering. You got to help her out. I didn't say to be dishonest, but so help her out. If you think something looks horrible, so there's always time to say it later. You should know that.
But we're allowed to lie to keep the peace, right?
You're allowed to lie to keep the peace, but sometimes you could think positive about it. If she's wearing a head covering that's a very pretty color, you tell it's a pretty color. The fact that you don't think it matches with her dress is a separate question, but it is a pretty color. You should always find what's good to say. This brings us to a good point. You come to supper, and the food's too salty. So you could react right away, or you could thank her for preparing the wonderful supper. And a few days later, you could discuss with her about the supper that she made. If on the spot, you're going to say things, so you're hurting her feelings. She just invested a lot of time and effort into it. On the other hand, she might want to know. So after you've praised and you've shown appreciation, so then you could figure out if she's in the mood to hear something, and if how you should say it, when you should say it. All too often what happens is a person eats it, and his reaction has nothing to do with what's going to practically help for the future. His reaction is what he feels like doing. So we didn't say lie to keep peace. But the idea is that a person should think before he speaks. And initially, he should first show appreciation. There's definitely what to show appreciation for. She worked hard to make the meal, whether it came out good or not. Now, if there are things that could be improved, so you have to think if it's worth mentioning it. And if yes, how and when to mention it.
They really think they know how to cook. So even if you say, well, it's great, and then you talk later about,
Then you have to think how to say it. And definitely the first time she's wearing head covering.
I hope she's a great cook.
Cooking is something you could learn. I wouldn't choose a wife based on how she cooks.
I'm not a cook myself, so it's not important that she knows how to cook. Good. The bonus for sure.
should just know that I haven't...
But I could very well.
Okay, good. So...
I didn't
say the lie. I just think that the first thing a person should do is show appreciation for what was done. And then a person should think if it's worth mentioning anything now. So let's say this time the rice is bland. She didn't put in enough salt. But every other time she did. So why say something? Next time it's going to be good anyways. Usually you're saying something because you feel like saying something. Not because it's going to help anything. And that's forbidden. Why should a person... That's forbidden. Why should a person hurt someone else's feeling, especially his wife? Speak about honoring one another. It means also knowing to keep our mouths shut, thinking before we speak, and praising, giving praise. Now, sometimes when you're going to give praise, you're going to come home and you say, "That's amazing. How'd you clean the house so well?" And she says, "No, it was nothing." Mm-hmm. So that happens once, happens twice. By the third time, you're thinking, "Okay, so I won't say anything." No, when she's saying that was nothing, she wants you to disagree. She wants you to say, "What do you mean that was nothing? You had a tremendously hard day at work. You took the kid to the doctor. You got back and put up supper. You did the laundry. You ironed. And on top of all that, you cleaned up the house. How'd you do such a thing?" When she's saying that was nothing, more often than not, what she means to say is, I didn't hear enough, right? You got to argue with me. Tell me more. So be prepared for that. The husband whose wife tells him that was nothing, and he says, "Okay, I won't mention it again." So he's being a fool. That's not right. And don't think it's just girls. We're that way too. Just in different ways. So we're discussing honoring one's wife. And honoring one's wife includes not saying things in front of other people, which includes if there are arguments between the couple, if there's something they disagree on, so that's no one else's business. And if there's something that he must tell her, I don't know what it is, what it could be, but let's say she left the lights on. Or she, I don't know, I can't think of anything that's important enough that he must tell her on the spot, but let's say there is. What could be an example? I don't know.
Your head covers
Let's say, right. He sees that her head covering slipped back, and she would want to cover her hair more, and she should cover her hair more. So the proper thing is to take her to the side and speak to her. God forbid to comment in front of someone else. There's a story about a guy who was having his Rosh Hashiva over for the Friday night meal. And they're coming home from shul, and they walk in, and the house is in disarray. The kids are running all around. There's a tremendous balagan. There's a mess on the floor, and this kid spilled that, and that kid spilled the other thing, and one kid's pulling the other kid's hair, and she's trying to take care of the baby, and he walks into the house, and sees what's going on, so he asks the Rashiv to sit down, and he helps her out, and they work on everything, they put everything together. Then they come to the Shabbos table, and the challahs aren't covered. So the guy feels like, my Rosh Hashiva should see that I don't have covered challahs. I don't have a... So he tells his wife, why didn't you put a cover on the challahs? You know, the halacha says you have to have a cover on the challah. And he thinks, why should my Rosh Hashiva feel like I don't know anything? He says, you know, just like the man. When the man came down to the Jews, there was a covering underneath and covering on top. We have to cover the challahs. So she brings the cover, he covers the challahs, they have the meal. And the next day, the Rosh Hashiva calls him over and he says, "I just wanted you to know, there's another reason why we cover the challahs. We cover the challahs so as not to embarrass them when we're going to make kiddush on the wine, and we're taking wine, even though challahs have precedence. When we make a blessing, we should really make a blessing on the bread before the wine. So to speak, we don't want to embarrass the challahs." Think about it. If the Torah wanted us to be so concerned to cover the challahs so as not to embarrass them, what would the Torah say about a husband who comments to his wife about covering the challahs in front of a Rosh Hashiva? So sometimes we think, we got to cover the challahs. But God forbid. God forbid to embarrass or make a comment in front of someone else. Even if it's a comment that theoretically she would want to hear. So there's no reason anyone else should hear it. Sometimes We have to remind ourselves that the source of the Shekhinah in the house is the wife. We say, Akeret Abayit, she's the main one of the house. The wife is the home. Ishto hi beito. We're on the side. We got to help. We got to guide and help the house be Torah and give guidance as to how to do it. But bottom line, she's the one that's going to run the home. Anyone that thinks he's going to run the home, it doesn't work that way. In the average home, the normal home, the wife is the one that really has a handle on what the children's chinuch is like and what the avira, what the spirit in the house is going to be like. So one should value that. If one has a good home, he should know it's her. And if things aren't going right, then he should check himself. Maybe more than likely he's causing it. The next point that, in my opinion, is very, very important in a home is appreciation. In a survey of runaway wives, women who ran away from their home, a huge percentage, way over 50%, I don't remember if it was 60 or 70 or 80, I don't remember the percentage, but it was way over 50%, said that their main reason for running away from the home was lack of appreciation. They didn't feel appreciated. The Gemara says that there was a discussion in the Beis Medrash about one Tana had a daughter, and Rebbe told him, it's wonderful, now you are Mekayim Revu. It says, Pru Urvu, multiply, and you should have fruits and multiply, and the girl is the source of multiplication, so you had a girl finally. And the Gemara discusses whether he was just appeasing him or it was a true blessing that the guy had a girl. And the Gemara discusses girls as opposed to boys. And the Gemara says that the boy is like perfume. And the girl is like a tanner, like hides. No one wants to walk into a hide factory. It stinks. They're working with hides. But the truth is that no one needs perfume. And everyone needs hides. Your shoes are made of hide. If you don't have shoes, you got problems. If you don't have perfume, you'll be okay. And no one appreciates their shoes. But if you put on good cologne, then everyone says, you smell so good. That's the difference between boys and girls. What a woman does is not appreciated. She bakes a meal. She cooks a meal. You eat it. Second later, you forget it. She cleans the house. You walk in. You mess it up. Second later, you forget it. Chances are you don't even notice what she cleaned. She irons clothing. You wear it. Second later, she has to start all over again. Everything that she does is jobs that by their nature are thankless and have to be redone. The husband goes out, he gets a good job, he's making good money. Oh, he's a lawyer, he's a doctor, everyone appreciates him. Her? She's a housewife. No. The most elementary need in a marriage is appreciation. There's a thirst that every person has, husband and wife, to be appreciated. In my opinion, that's one of the basic drives to get married. I think that's one of the things that people need most when they get married. I would put it as number one or number two in why really people get married. And it's very easy not to appreciate one's wife. It's difficult to appreciate one's wife. Because when you walk into the house and you see one corner that's dirty, the first thing that you think is, why is that dirty? You walk in and a kid's wearing a dirty diaper and it's stinky, the first thing you think is, gee, it stinks here. You don't think about all the work that she did aside from that, the 10 diapers she's changed until this minute, all the cooking and cleaning and baking, etc. That's not what comes to mind. The first thing that comes to mind is what isn't right. And that's why it's very hard, naturally, to show appreciation. And a person has to be conscious of the difficulty and overcome it. A person has to know that one of the things that he must do as a husband is show appreciation. Stop and think. I always tell guys when they think my wife is this and that, I say, wait a second. Before you tell me what isn't right, I want you to list for me what is right. Before you think you have a right to mention what wasn't done correctly, what wasn't done properly, I want you to tell me that you've mentioned everything that was done properly. How many things did she do today, like going to the mail and going to shopping and taking care of the kids and calling her parents and taking care of the bills? And how many of those things did you say thank you for? Which of those things did you appreciate? Did you show appreciation for that you think you have a right to say, but what about this? She's not paying the bills, or she's spending our money, or whatever. Before you bring up the points that you think you have to work on or aren't right, have you looked at all the points that she's doing? And the average person doesn't. I don't know of any person that I could think of that's shown enough appreciation to his spouse. I can't know what's going on in people's homes, but I think that there's a lot of appreciation that has to be shown. And I think that naturally, we won't show it. And we have to understand that we're not showing it. And that's why we have to ask ourselves 10 times before we dare mention that the soup is too salty, or the rice is too salty or too bland. How many times did you thank her for when the rice was good? How many times did you show appreciation for that? And it's not surprising that this is one of the things that women complain about most. So you'll ask the average guy, and he'll say, well, what appreciation does she show me? You can't live in marriage that way. You have to give. You don't have to think about whether the other side is giving. When you enter marriage, your responsibility is to make it a good home. A person could always look at the home and say, well, she's this and she's that. Doesn't work that way. Get the ball rolling. You start showing. And start thinking how much you haven't shown enough. The person has to recognize that he's always going to fall short of the appreciation he should show. And he has to work on it. I told a guy in a certain situation, that a difficult situation in the home, nothing that they did wrong, but there was a difficult halachic situation in the home. It was a situation where because of certain halachos, there were certain difficulties. I told him, until we resolve these halachic issues, I want you to give your wife a note of appreciation every day. He looked at me, every day? I said, look, you're right. I should really say two or three notes, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, one at night. But I want to leave you leeway that you should do something of your own, not just because I said so. So he said, no, one's enough. It's more than enough. It's the maximum. It's not right. It's not the maximum. It's not even the minimum. The minimum, in my opinion, is more than that. A person has to show appreciation, and he can't show appreciation all the time, so he has to train himself to show appreciation as much as possible. We're out of time. We'll continue on this point, God willing, next week.